Hello, and welcome to Retail Online Integration's Live Retail Roundtable, Debunking the Top 5 Website Performance Myths for Retailers, sponsored by Gomez. I'm Joe Keenan, Senior Editor of Retail Online Integration, and the host of today's event. Before we get started with the presentation, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's Live Retail Roundtable. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button at the bottom of the console or let us know via the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portions of today's presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you're enjoying this retail roundtable and would like to spread the word to your peers, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the Survey button. This survey will also be distributed at the end of today's event. As you know, today's speakers will be answering select questions live from the audience. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration in advance at any time. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire Retail Roundtable on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. After that, the event can be viewed from Retail Online Integration's website, www.retailonlineintegration.com. Finally, we encourage you to tweet about today's Retail Roundtable. Please use hashtag #ROIWebinar when doing so. Joining me today in today's Retail Roundtable are Carter Lee, Vice President of Technology at Overstock.com, an online retailer which offers closeout and discount brand and non-brand name merchandise, as well as Eric Shore, Senior Vice President of Marketing at web performance monitoring services provider Gomez, a CompuWare company. Without further ado, I'd like to pass it over to Eric to kick off the conversation on website performance.
Okay, Joe, thank you very much. So this is Eric Scherer from Gomez, and I am going to Alexis, I've got some problem here. I can't seem to advance. Here we go. Maybe that's what I have to do. Today, the way today's session will work is we're going to have a little bit of a back and forth between me and Carter Lee from Overstock.com. I'm going to be talking about some common myths in that face website retailers, and we'll talk about the myth, then we'll talk about the actual reality behind that myth. And then we will have Carter give a real live, you know, view of that from an internet giant, you know, one of the most successful and famous online retailers in the industry. During that time, we'll be also allowed to have questions from the audience if you'd like to provide some questions. And Alexis, I can't seem to advance slides here, so. Something's not quite right. If you can see the slides and advance them for me, then we'll have to do it that way. But I can't see the slides or advance them. Okay, so pardon everybody for the slide interruption here. We got a little bit of an issue, I guess.
Eric, you can go ahead and just roll through the presentation. I'll push your slides for you.
Okay, I need to know where you are now.
I'm going to go ahead and put up myth number one.
All right, let's talk about myth number one then. So the first myth that we commonly hear in our business is that web application performance is a technology issue. People talk about it a lot, like the reason you worry about performance is for technology concerns, and it's driven by technologists, and it's all about technology. So Alexis, can you advance the slide, please? The reality of the situation is that web performance truly is a business issue. The organizations that we deal with are working on web performance entirely because it betters their business. In just a minute, I'm going to show you some very interesting data that shows there's a direct correlation between web performance and user behavior, that is the visitors to your website, and web performance and the business results of that website. So, Alexis, let's advance the slide. This slide shows you some very interesting data that we have gathered over observing literally millions of page views of tests and monitoring being run from our customers. And what you'll see here is the relationship between the time it takes for a page to load and the conversion rate on that page. And what you'll notice here is that when page load, we picked some just particular data points, when the page loading time drops from 8 seconds to 2 seconds, the conversion rate increases by 74%. But clearly, customers are talking with their actions here that the performance of the page directly relates to their willingness to complete a transaction. Alexis, if you advance the slide. This next slide also shows a very interesting correlation, which is very relevant to online retailers, which is the relationship of page load time to abandonment rate. And you see two lines here. There's two things that were graphed. The green line shows the abandonment rate for the average user across all browsers. This data, by the way, was gathered across 200 sites and 177 million plus page views. And it shows a direct correlation between the time it takes to load a page and the abandonment rate of the page. Now, of course, we all know that abandonment rate is bad, so we want an abandonment rate to be low. And the faster the page, the lower the abandonment rate. The yellow line shows that same measurement for iPhone users running Safari on their iPhone. And you'll notice that in the first couple of seconds, these mobile users are a little forgiving, but they become unforgiving very quickly, and the abandonment rate rises very quickly on their iPhones as the page load time increases. So let me turn it now over to Carter to give you a real-life perspective from Overstock.com.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Customer experience is extremely important to Overstock.com. You know, we've spent a lot of time building our brand and in a lot of different ways. And since we don't have a brick-and-mortar presence, you know, basically our website is our showroom. And so if that experience isn't doesn't perform for the customer, then, you know, it's like having a dirty showroom floor, not having salespeople there, or whatever it is in the brick-and-mortar industry. That would be a negative experience. And so it's extremely important to us to have, you know, a website that performs. I think it complements our brand. And as you know, the more clicks you have, the more revenue you would have. And the deeper somebody gets into our website, the more likely we're able to convert them. And so it's really not even just about the homepage being quick. It's about all the components being performant. I think it also goes beyond really just the website and the purchasing process. I think that the other components of your website, you know, how a customer obtains customer service or information about a product or anything like that, has to also be performant, because if post fulfillment, if they're receiving a bad experience, also they probably won't come back and shop with you. And so, because of all these things, Overstock really does view website performance as a strategic initiative. It's something that we look at every single day, and that my team spends an awful lot of time on. And we've got talented people. And I think one of the things that, you know, has been important as we've kind of looked at this area of concern is that we've really invested in the human capital side. We've gotten people that know how to deal with website problems and make websites faster, make technology respond quicker for the consumer, but we've also invested in the back end with the technology. And the two of those things complementing each other has allowed us to really be fairly successful in this area.
Great. Thanks, Carter. All right, then. Myth number two, something we commonly hear, and this is, I think, something that's really becoming understood in today's industry a lot. A lot of people say to us, what happens outside of my data center is out of my control. You know, people talk about time to first byte and that sort of measurement, making the data centers, the servers, all the infrastructure run as fast as possible. And once we push our data out to the internet, well, it's outside of our control. That's a very common myth. And the reality is that you really need to control something, the entire application delivery chain. This notion of a delivery chain is something that we're hearing more and more about in the industry today. And the notion is that, sure, you've got all kinds of complex software and hardware, physical and virtual environments inside your data center. But once you push it out to the internet, it goes to a delivery chain which dramatically impacts the experience that your customer receives. You've got your major ISPs, you've got third parties and cloud providers, you've got CDNs, you've got local ISPs, now you've got mobile carriers, you have a whole plethora of devices, and then you've got your customer. On top of that, some are part of your application may be hosted or provided from a cloud provider. And all of these things dramatically impact the experience that your end user will receive. And you can't have an attitude that says, I only can control what's inside my data center. In fact, you can have dramatic control over what happens outside of your firewall on the internet, but you need to have the visibility and the data to do that. An important dimension of this is the fact that for many web applications, in fact, I would say an increasing number of web applications, the web application only comes to life as it manifests itself in the browser. The browser, or the client, is becoming the integration platform. So this slide shows you a little bit of a deeper view of what we just talked about from the delivery chain. There's lots of sources of information and content that influence the average web transaction. Now, I talk to a lot of people about this issue of what's happening in the browser and information from multiple third parties. And many people think that the only way data would come from a third party is if they have some kind of a data feed from another website. Well, that certainly is the case, that would be one form of third-party provider. But there's a lot of other kinds of providers that go into a web application. You might be using a shopping cart service from a third party. If you have a web analytics tag on your website from somebody like Omniture or Google, that can influence the performance of your web page. Ads from an ad server, the way your CDN is optimized or not can dramatically influence the way your web page operates, et cetera, et cetera. Here's some very interesting data I would like to show you about the average web transaction as we see it across a very large data set. Now, one of the things that you need to understand about Gomez and the reason we have this data is Gomez is a SaaS offering that allows organizations to monitor the performance of their website literally from anywhere around the globe. And whenever customers run those transactions, the data all gets sent to the centralized Gomez SaaS portal. So we have this enormous warehouse of data that represents the reality of customer transactions that are literally running every minute of every day across the internet. And when we look at that mass of data, we can see some really interesting trends that come out of it. So one of the interesting bits of data that we've observed recently is the number of hosts that are accessed by the browser per user transaction. So the data I'm showing you right now is data that we recently gathered by looking at transactions being run by over 3,000 companies from multiple locations around the planet. And when you look at the transactions as they're being executed from each of these locations, like Hong Kong, Stockholm, Amsterdam, et cetera, what you see in the right-hand part of the slide is the number of hosts that average transaction is accessing when it you know, reaches out from the browser. Now, what is a host? A host is typically a fully qualified domain. It's not a server. Don't think of it as a server. It's a fully qualified domain. Now, that might be a different domain inside of a data center. So, for example, gomez.com would be one domain, but images.gomez.com might be another. But more commonly, that host is a third-party provider, some source which is contributing content or providing a service to that transaction. And what you see here is that the average transaction today is using multiple hosts in ways that some organizations often overlook or forget. So the reality here is that you do need to control what happens outside of your data center. Third-party content especially is becoming an ever-present and increasing component of end-user experience. So, Carter, how do you see this from Overstock.com?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more on the things that you said. I think that, you know, this has been the area that we've had some of the biggest challenges in as far as getting our website to perform. I think part of it is that the evolution of the web has just completely changed how websites function and increase the reliance on some of these third parties. It's also, you know, it becomes difficult to and frustrating sometimes when there's a third-party provider that is out of your control a little bit. And so you have to educate yourself on, you know, who does what on your website and who does what beyond your website, but that can affect your website, and really getting all those pieces to kind of work in harmony. And that's just a constant battle for us sometimes, because, you know, we do a good job with the things that we have direct control over, but the things that we indirectly control, we have to, you know, manage those differently. And so, you know, I think that sometimes these third-party providers can provide a liability for you, but there's ways to kind of mitigate that. I mean, one of the things is you can't make any assumptions regarding the performance of these third-party and these external components. You have to set clear expectations with them, and one of the things that we do and we try to do is establish SLAs with them, service level agreements that are built into contracts, or maybe they're just things that we say verbally that we expect you to perform this way, and then we interface closely with that third-party provider as much as possible. We'll monitor them regularly. We'll have meetings with them. We'll talk to them daily if they're not performing. And, you know, sometimes we have to turn them off. We have to turn off functionality on our website, and sometimes even if it's going to help the bottom line as far as revenue goes, if it's not performing and not delivering the kind of experience that we expect for our customers, then we'll shut them off. We won't sacrifice a money-making technology if it's going to make the experience of the customer a bad one. And so all of these things, you know, you just got to realize that all of these things make up the whole of what your website is and what you and your reputation is on the line sometimes because of these third parties. And so it just needs to be something that's really carefully monitored. You know, also just, you know, a lot of the different technologies that are out there that are beyond the third party, just got to keep an eye on what those are, because those can also have, if you're not on top of the latest technology, and I know you're going to talk about browsers probably next, but, you know, that's an area that, you know, if you're not on top of what's changing in that area, you could also have a bad experience that's outside of your data center.
You know, Carter, I like what you said, and I want to just underline a few things you said. You talked about how, you know, managing what goes on inside your data center, you do with one perspective, and then managing the third-party providers is an important thing to do, but you have to think about it differently, right? And I love what you said about you can't just trust them. So you establish SLAs with them, but as you said, it's very important to manage them and measure them every day, because typically, the SLAs, you might not get a report on the SLA until the problem's happened and it's too late. So your comment about every day watching this information and checking with your third-party providers and overseeing it, it just resonates with what I hear from all the other leaders in the industry doing yet. Also.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So let's move on then to the next myth, which is exactly what you mentioned. And I hear this all the time. People say, all browsers are the same. Another variation of this, by the way, is, well, we can only optimize for one browser. We optimize for Internet Explorer. The reality of the situation is that all browsers are not the same. In fact, the browser market today is more fragmented and more rapidly changing than it ever was. You know, many years ago, it was pretty easy. Internet Explorer was all we had to worry about. Well, that's not the case anymore. Who's number one today may not be number one tomorrow. And more importantly is who is number one with your customers. We see lots of examples of websites where the primary visitors or the majority of visitors to that website is using Firefox or Safari. And if that organization has decided to only worry about optimizing for IE, they're missing the boat. They're doing a disservice to the majority of their customers. The truth of the matter is that every browser has different operational characteristics. For example, the way their rendering engines work, the way they open the number of parallel connections, the way they process JavaScript, et cetera, et cetera. And we see these differences becoming greater, not less. Browsers are diverging rather than converging. Another really important aspect of this is that processing is moving to the browser. So 5 or 6 years ago, it was pretty straightforward. Most of what you do is push HTML to the browser, it rendered it, and you were done. Now that's becoming much more complicated with JavaScript processing and local processing on the browser. I'm going to show you some data around that in a minute. But the fact of the matter is the processing time on a browser is increasing. It's becoming a fatter client. And so all of these factors have a major impact on the user experience. They have a major impact on the way the application performs, on the functionality of the application, and the appearance of the application. Now, let me show you some interesting data. Once again, this is observed data that we gather because of these, thousands of customers running transactions every day. By the way, I'll warn you, the graph on this slide is wrong. The colors are flipped, but let me explain it. What this slide shows is two really important statistics, performance statistics, for virtually every major browser and version of browser on the market today. The bottom lines, the lines that are green, really represent what's called perceived render time. I know the legend is wrong, so the legend is flipped. And what is perceived render time? It's the amount of time it takes for a page to load above the fold. Now, we all know that pages can be very large and that they can load above the fold before they're done loading entirely. Perceived render time is the amount of time it takes for the page to load above the fold. It's called perceived render time because the user perceives that the page has loaded. Even though it isn't typically fully loaded, it's perceived to have been fully loaded. The longer bars, the ones that are blue on this slide, are the actual complete load time of the page, all of the objects that you can't see or that are below the fold. What you see here is that the story is shown in the variations on the bars. Every browser is different from the other, and every version of every browser is different from the other. You see dramatic differences in perceived load time and complete render time between different browsers. So the fact of the matter is, every browser is different, and you can't even say with simplicity, I'm optimizing my site for IE, because IE 6, 7, 8, and 9 all work differently in those very important areas like opening parallel connections and JavaScript processing. So optimizing for one version does not optimize necessarily for the other. Here's, again, another bit of interesting data that we've observed over looking at literally millions of transactions is the client-side processing impact on response time. Now, what you see in this graph is we took a random set of websites, and they're just listed across the bottom, and for each website, there's a couple of different browsers that are shown. And the green part of the bars is the amount of processing time spent basically outside of the browser, between the network and server time. And the blue part of the graph shows the amount of time spent processing inside the browser, inside the client. You'll notice, again, that it varies by type of application, type of website. It also varies by type of browser. And the important point here is that the amount of time spent processing on the client is becoming greater and having a greater impact on the end user experience. Now, what does that mean for those of you worried about this sort of thing? One of the things it means is you can't just measure performance inside your data center. You can't assume that since your data center operations are, you can't just measure the components of your data center and assume if everything's running okay in the data center, that means the user is getting a fine experience. because the ultimate experience happens in the browser, and the browser processing time is taking more and more time than it ever used to. So, Carter, again, back to you to hear your real-world view of this particular topic.
Okay, thanks, Eric. You know, this is not necessarily an area that I directly control at Overstock, but it is something that affects, you know, my team and the operation of the website dramatically, because when we're looking at performance, we're looking at it from so many different angles, and exactly what you described is outside of the data center, you know, that last mile. In the first mile, you know, we're looking at every different kind of way possible. And this team, you know, at Overstock, you know, we have a very talented group of front-end developers, graphic artists, and people like that that we have to work closely with. And I know that they've worked tirelessly on ensuring that our website's compatible with every browser and that it performs well with every browser. It's something that they've done for a very, very long time. You know, I've been here a long time, 10 years, and I remember hearing conversations about, you know, emerging browsers back in the day and how we were going to make sure that our website performed just as well as it did in Internet Explorer. And, you know, so I think the ways, there's a lot of different ways that we deal with this is, you know, obviously you do want to pay attention to your highest traffic and revenue, you know, driven browsers. There's times that, you know, you know, there's a new browser that comes out, and you know, and you can pay a lot of attention to it, but you got to watch as far as how many people are really using it. But you don't want to ignore anything because it could change overnight. And you know, you've got to test and monitor the functionality, your functionality, in all these different browsers. You have to have tools that you can do that. And again, I can't emphasize enough that you have to have the right talent. You know, not only these front-end developers, but the kind of code that you use on your website to make sure that it's compatible with all browsers. We employ an awful lot of developers here at Overstock, and by the way, we're looking for many more, so please submit your resume, a little plug there. But, you know, we could use Java developers because this is an area of concern, and a lot of it is because of this issue. You know, we have to test and monitor every browser for every type of situation possible. And I think the proliferation of these mobile devices is another area where, you know, a good example of where a browser might not have a lot of traffic coming to your website initially, but all of a sudden the whole world changes, and now you're dealing with a whole new browser that you've never had to deal with before. And I think things like tablets and you know, smartphones are obviously a big area where this has changed. Tablets, I think, are going to be huge, and you've got internet compatible TVs that are starting to hit the market or have been out there for a while. Blu-ray players, you know, I can get on Google TV and devices like that and browse the internet as well. And I think that those kinds of things are going to start taking hold and really change this and make this challenge that you mentioned even a bigger one in the future.
I just wanted to jump in here. I have a question from the audience pertaining to this myth about all browsers being the same. One of our attendees would like to know, if your content looks good in Internet Explorer, can you be reasonably certain then that your site was working for most of your end users? Carter or Eric, do you have thoughts on that?
Carter, you want to go first?
Well, I mean, sometimes you can. I mean, there are a lot of commonalities between browsers, but, you know, if I understand the question correctly, I think you can never make that assumption. You've got to make sure that you're testing every single browser, and that, you know, websites are large. There's a lot of content there, so sometimes this can be difficult. But the key components of your website, you need to ensure that they are rendering in every browser type possible.
I agree with Carter. You can't make that assumption. You're running a huge risk if you assume that everything will look fine on every version of browser. Now, I know some people are probably saying, whoa, how are we supposed to do that? There are services that let you, you know, basically display your website on multiple browsers, you know, as a SaaS-provided service, a cloud-provided service. So you don't have to have every browser and every operating system running in your lab. So it can be done, and it can be done in a reasonably automated way, but it's pretty important that you don't just assume that it looks fine or works fine in every browser.
Okay, thanks. And I just wanted to remind the audience that you have the ability to ask a question at any time. Just make use of the Ask a Question feature on your console, and you can submit your consideration for your questions. Okay? I guess we're now going to move on to myth number four.
Okay, thanks, Joe. So myth number four, actually Carter kind of touched on this. It's about the mobile explosion. And the myth is that mobile users expect slower performance. Now, I bet everybody on this call has some kind of mobile device and knows other people that have one. You know, it's commonly thought that because mobile devices are relatively new and the whole mobile thing is a relatively new phenomenon, that it will take the industry a while to get it right, and people understand that accessing a website or using a mobile app from a mobile device is just naturally going to be a little bit slower than it would be if you sat down on a fully configured PC with a regular web browser. It's a pretty common, you know, attitude that I hear. In fact, the truth of the matter is that's not the case at all. The reality is that mobile users expect the same performance as desktop users. What you see in this slide is the results of some surveys that we've done. And the slide on the left really is not data from Gomez. It's data that shows the explosion of the mobile market. And I think we all have seen data and graphs from analysts that talk about the fact that within a couple of years, there'll be more people accessing the Internet from mobile devices than there will be from PCs. What we've learned in all of our research is that mobile users don't think of a mobile web and a PC web. They just think of the web. It's one web. They're just accessing it from a mobile device. And their expectations, in this last survey that was done, almost 60% of mobile users expected websites to load as quickly on their mobile phone as a PC. And in that same survey, 60% of those users said they had a problem in the last year accessing a website, and the problem was slow load time. We also are seeing another phenomenon, which is people use their mobile devices commonly in situations where speed is important. They're running through an airport, or they're on a bus, or they're doing something where they need an answer pretty quickly, and they don't have the patience to wait for the page to load. So the myth that mobile users, you know, are understanding about slow performance is a myth. The reality is they have every bit of the expectations of performance that a regular web user has. Here's some interesting data that actually also touches on something that Carter mentioned a moment ago, was about the difference in performance across different mobile devices. So previously we talked about the performance differences across different browsers, but let's talk about different mobile devices. And what you see here is, again, those same statistics that we showed before about page load time and perceived render time. This time the colors are correct and the graph is correct. You'll notice that perceived load time is always lower than full page load time, which makes sense because the part above the fold typically loads faster than the whole page does. And you'll see, again, dramatic differences between different mobile devices. iPad, you know, winning here in terms of performance, but every device being very different. So very important to keep that in mind. The mobile market is exploding very quickly, and it's important to make sure that you are properly measuring and optimizing for it. Carter, what's the view from Overstock about this mobile craziness?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's nearly exploded overnight, but I don't think any of us can say we didn't see it coming. I mean, you know, I had a smartphone 7 years ago, and they're just so different now. But, you know, this the experience of using a mobile device, you know, I can't agree with you more. It's just like the if you're on the run, I think the expectation is that that application has to perform even faster when you're on the run because you're not going to have the patience. You need your answer quickly. And so, and, you know, you've got this explosion of apps, and you've got a lot of these app stores, and so you can't ignore, you know, the Android store, the iTunes store, and those types of apps that are going to be a way that your customers are going to want to communicate with you or purchase from you. And so, you know, we do put a lot of emphasis into mobile from that perspective, as well as our mobile site. And I think, personally, my view is what's happening with tablets right now is where this is really going to change. It's still a little difficult to navigate a website like ours, you know, on a mobile device, even if it was performing quickly, because, you know, it's small and things like that. But you're getting all these tablets that are still fairly mobile, and, you know, a lot of them are coming on the market. They can fit in your pocket pretty much. And I think this is the area that it's going to just cause it to explode and really start to, you know, I read somewhere that people aren't sitting in front of their desktops anymore because there's a Facebook app, so I don't need to do Facebook at my computer. I'm going to do it on the run, you know, and different things like that. Well, that's going to be the expectation. I don't know the last time that I've logged on to Facebook, but I do Facebook every day, and on my desktop, but I do it on my mobile devices every day and rarely log in on the desktop. And so we have to assume that our website is going to go through that same type of metamorphosis and that people are going to want to purchase from us on these devices. And because of that, you know, the performance has to be there. You know, if it's not, they're just going to abandon it, and you can't ignore it. It's a combination of your, you know, the regular traditional browser, the website performing there and performing in these devices. You've got to look at it from all angles. And I think, again, like what I said before, is if your customer service applications, the stuff post-fulfillment, or if they're asking a question about a product or something like that, those methods for communicating with you also have to be mobilized. You know, you have to have applications where those customers can access that through their mobile device, and it has to perform well on those devices as well. I think if you're not doing these things, it's going to negatively impact your brand at some point. And I think the companies that don't see this revolution that I wouldn't say is coming, that's already here, they're going to be left behind.
On this topic of mobile, we have a question from the audience. And the question is, do you recommend a special site just for mobile devices? The attendee gives the example of when he goes to MLB.com on an iPhone, it takes him to m.mlb.com, which is clearly optimized for his mobile device. Can you give a little insight on this as far as recommending a special site just for mobile devices?
Well, I don't think you want to have to direct customers there. You know, you want to be able to have them come to the same place, but the website should be intelligent enough to recognize that they're on a mobile device and what kind, and serve them that content based on the device they're on and have it optimized for that device. With so many different browsers and different devices coming, that becomes a bit of a challenge, but there's some commonalities there. I think one of the experiences that you have sometimes, like I have it in on an iPhone, is you go to a website and you see they've delivered you their mobile site, but you want the full browser because on the iPhone you can kind of pinch and squeeze and still see the full website, and you want some of that additional functionality. So that kind of is an interesting area, is have they made this the website light, or have they given me their full website? So I think companies are going to be challenged with, well, how do I balance between being able to deliver as much content to the customer on a smaller screen and giving them option. And a lot of the websites will say, hey, if you want a view of our full site, just click here. That works nice, but I think this is something that people are going to have to experiment a little with. It kind of depends on what type of website you have.
Okay, Carter, thanks. So we'll move on now to our final myth, which is myth number 5. Here's what we hear from lots of people is, as long as my page or pages load in 4 seconds or less, my site is fast enough. This 4-second rule has been around kind of as a rule of thumb for a number of years. I'll actually show you the source of that, give you some data around that. But, you know, we hear this a lot, that, you know, that's fast enough, and if I achieve that time, I should be okay. The reality of the situation is that customer expectations are growing and changing every day. Here is the source of that 4-second rule. In 2006, Forrester Research did a pretty extensive study that asked online buyers about their behavior. And one of the questions was around, what are your expectations for how quickly a website should load? Back then, the majority of people said in 4 seconds or less. Forrester repeated that same survey recently and found out that now people are saying a site should load in about 2 seconds or less, or a page should load in about 2 seconds or less. So that's half the time that they said just, you know, 5 years ago. The same survey had some pretty interesting statistics in it. Almost 80% of people who said they had a dissatisfying experience with a site would no longer go back to that site. And we all know that's because, you know, competitors are just one click away, and it's pretty easy for customers to switch to another site. Over half the people said that page loading time is very important to their site loyalty. I'm not going back to a slow website. And a third of people said that when they recently abandoned a shopping session, they did so because they were dissatisfied with site performance. So what we're seeing is a growing expectation for how quickly pages should load and an increasingly growing importance of that page load time on customer loyalty and willingness to stay with a site. Another dimension of this is, you know, is kind of answering the question, how fast is fast enough? And fast enough is not determined by some absolute number like 4 seconds or 2 seconds, nor is it determined by a survey by Forrester Research, because most consumers will never see that survey and have no idea about it. A lot of the expectations for how fast is fast enough is determined by comparisons with other websites. Think about your own behavior on the internet. When you visit, you know, major sites like Google or Facebook or those kind of places, and then you go to other sites and shop, your expectations for how quickly a page should load is formed by your aggregate expectations on the web. And when you're going to a particular type of shopping site, because there's very, you know, vertical type shopping sites, you know that there's other sites that compete that offer that same kind of offering. And if this site isn't fast enough, I'll go to another site. So the comparative performance of your site to others in your industry is also very important. And what you're seeing here is something that we call benchmarks. And this is a service that Gomez provides, something we do literally every day, is run transactions against thousands of websites around the planet and compare their performance to each other in industry vertical categories. So, and that's done sometimes from web browser access, it's done from different browsers, it's done from mobile devices, and it's done by industry. So it compares online retailers to each other, banks to each other, airline travel sites to each other, and so forth. And if you go to Gomez.com, you'll find some of this really interesting data that compares websites to each other. So you'll see there are various kinds of comparisons. The bottom line here is that whether you get the comparative data from the Gomez website or run your own particular comparisons, it's really important for you to stay in tune with what other competitors in your industry are doing so you can ensure that your website is fast enough in your industry. So, Carter, how do you guys deal with this aspect of ensuring website performance at Overstock?
Well, you know, I think you're right. I mean, if you look at our society and we're, you know, maybe the fast food society and how that's changed over the years, and the brick and mortar companies have this same challenge and they've had it for years. If you go into a store with a handful of goods to purchase and the line is too long and there's not enough cashiers, you're not going to, the chances that you drop that stuff, you know, off to the side and walk out the store are greater, you know, and that's why there's convenience stores and all these kinds of things. If your store's too big and complex and takes you too long to shop in there, then that's harder for consumers. And so being on the web, this is really no different. We have to capture that audience, and if we don't capture them at the right time, they're going to abandon their car. They're going to go on, and if they can't find what they're looking for, they're not going to ever put it in their cart. And so it's, you've got to look at the website as a whole And I just think that that 4 seconds is just not true anymore, and I question whether the 2 seconds is true anymore, although it's extremely difficult to get under that. But, you know, this is we need it to be quick, and what we do is we try to focus on making everything, you know, under 2 seconds, whether it's the – obviously the homepage is extremely important, and we like that to be under a second if possible, but you've got all these other – you know, aspects of a website, whether it's browsing information about a product or looking at a video or about the product or more product details, that stuff has to be quick, the product pages, and we look at the navigation of the website, the searching of a website. I can't emphasize how important search is. We know by what Google's done that if your search results don't come back, you know, they obviously have to be accurate too, but that has to be performing well. And then most important, I think the checkout process has to be quick. It can't be cumbersome, but it also has to perform well. If customers have a problem during that checkout process, you're going to lose them. And you're going to lose them for that transaction, and you're probably going to lose them beyond that. And we just can't have that happen. We can't afford to have that happen. And so I think you're right. The benchmarking is extremely important because, you know, One thing is it's you got to benchmark yourself against yourself. You know, you've got to look at how you're performing every day and how you're performing over time, because as you add content onto a website and you get things that you want to do on the website and all these developers that I mentioned before, again, we're hiring them, you know, they are developing code every day that's making our website more functional, but at times the content that gets loaded on the website becomes harder to make load quickly because there's so much information there. So we have to watch how we trend over time. We say, how are we performing today after this code release? How are we performing now? What can we do to make this quicker? And then I think you're right. We're in a competitive society. We have to compare ourselves against the other people that we view as our competition. So how am I looking versus this competitor, and how am I looking versus this competitor? The benchmarks that Gomez provides are extremely helpful for that. We like to see where we rank every day, and it's kind of fun. I think the other way to do it is, I mean, the other thing that's important is you can't just look at your own, the people that you're competing with. You've got to look at just the industry as a whole and keep pace with that industry. You've got a lot of different people on the web, a lot of different companies on the web, and you want to perform as well as any of them, regardless of what industry you're in.
You know, I like what you said there, Carter, and I'll just summarize what we tell people in terms of best practices. Benchmark yourself against yourself over time. Benchmark yourself against your major competitors, and benchmark yourself against, you know, industry giants, you know, web giants, because those are all really important reference points. By the way, I'll also tell the audience a little bit of sneak preview information here is that annually Gomez publishes a report about the fastest performing websites and mobile sites, and next week Gomez will be revealing the results from 2010. I'll also leak a little bit of good news here, but you'll find Overstock.com in that report. So congratulations to you, Carter, and your team for what you've done there. Joe, are there any questions?
Yeah, I was just we've covered quite a bit of ground here on website performance. So we have some questions here from the audience that I want to pose to Carter and Eric. The first one, we'll stick here with this topic of page load times. Question here is, while I know there are a lot of things we can do to improve on load time, browser ease being one of them, could you give maybe 5 immediate improvements that a retailer could do if it has basic access to its stores, and they say things that could be done maybe without requiring extensive development?
Well, you know, I think hire good people is definitely one. I mean, you've got to make sure that you don't have to have a lot of people, but people that do understand. And if you don't directly employ those people, there's other consulting firms and third parties that can help you there. I think, too, is making sure that you've got technology that supports the latest protocols and things. There's a lot of technology changes so much that if you don't stay on top of it, if you have old routers and switches and things like that, you could be doing a disservice as far as website performance goes. There are a lot of, you know, I can't really give specifics on what we've done. Some of that's a little bit stuff we don't reveal, but there are things that there are third parties that can take this area and really run with it. Whether it's consulting with you to help you figure out how to do it without extensive development, or sometimes there's devices and things like that that'll make a website perform a lot better. And some of them are expensive, and some of them are not so expensive. But I think the number one thing you've got to do, and they asked for five, and I think this is fifth, is you've got to watch it. You've got to monitor it. If you don't watch it, it's just like anything else. It's like a lawn that you don't mow and don't fertilize or don't pull the weeds out of. It's going to eventually run away from you.
You know, Carter, I just want to underline the last thing you said about monitoring and watching it, because if I'm correct, that's where you get the data to determine if you have a problem and what to do to go optimize the problem. So that's kind of the place we all begin, isn't it? Getting the information around the performance of your site at different locations from different browsers, from mobile devices. And when you have that data, then you can decide, well, do I have a problem and what am I going to do about it?
Right, exactly.
Joe, what else?
Yeah, we have another question here. When optimizing sites for mobile devices, is the entire site optimized, or is it just limited to five or less pages?
Do you want to take that, Eric, or me?
Well, I think that's kind of why don't you go first? Because I think these real life, you know, your real life view is what's more valuable here.
Well, you know, I kind of touched on this earlier. I think, and hopefully, I heard the question right. But you've got websites are large sometimes, and there's a lot of pages out there. So you definitely want to start. I think the strategy with mobile should be to start with the pages that receive the most views and optimize those for mobile or convert those to a mobile site. But if you're lacking content and what you have on your mobile site, it's a light version of what you have on your regular site, that could be a problematic. You know, you've got to be careful not to reduce functionality just to get it on a mobile device. But, you know, it's a good place to start. If you have no mobile presence, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, and I think it's clearly an option. It's a judgment call about site design, about how you want to do that. You clearly need to optimize the main transactions that you think people will be deploying from a mobile phone. That's something else to note, is that we don't recommend people optimize their entire website for every page to be as super fast as possible. You got to figure out what are the main business processes and key transactions on your website and optimize those first, because those are the ones that matter the most. Like you talked about, Carter, the shopping cart transaction. That's probably the most important transaction, you know, right next to the search and those kind of things to find the product.
Yeah, I mean, if all we offered in our mobile site was, hey, you can view our products and learn more about them, but to actually purchase them, you have to go to our regular website, that's not going to fly. And so, but, you know, there probably are situations with some types of websites where the content that's being delivered to a mobile device or to a regular desktop doesn't need to be on the mobile device. It's not necessarily the, you know, appropriate for a mobile device. And so you just got to look at your situation and do what's right there.
Okay. Another question here from the audience is, how much of a site performance can be affected purely by code versus hardware?
Well, you know, code plays a huge role. I mean, hardware is dumb. Code is intelligent, right? And so if the code is doing something weird, or there's a weird if it's just designed poorly, you know, and it's not as optimal as it could be, then no matter how much hardware you have sitting behind that, it's not going to perform. And it'll help to have more horsepower behind it, but you really need, you know, these developers to write the kind of code that is optimized for use on that hardware. So I think the two do complement each other, but you know, it's you can throw more hardware at anything, you know, and it's not going to make it as better as optimizing the code that is on the computer or on the servers.
And let me reinforce that, Carter, by reminding the audience that we just talked about how much of a role client-side processing is playing these days. So you can have your server, you can have the biggest servers in the world optimized, you know, with all the memory and everything you want, but if you're delivering poorly written code to the browser and it runs slowly on the browser, doesn't matter what your servers are doing, the user's going to have a bad experience.
Yeah, that's a good point, Eric, you know, and I think, you know, obviously desktops and mobile devices are changing, and so you've got to make sure that the type of code you're writing is optimized for the latest devices. At some point, you can probably ignore the people with dial-up and Windows 95, but I think you know, those people are important as well for a while. So you've got both ends of the spectrum and then all the people in the middle that are the masses that you've got to worry about.
Okay. We had a question come in referencing back to the slide Eric showed on browser load time. The question is it safe to assume that Internet Explorer just takes longer to load things than maybe some other browsers?
Well, I don't want to get in trouble for knocking Microsoft, but, you know, sometimes with the browser, it's personal preference, but, you know, IE8, it's a fast processor, but it's, you know, Microsoft does things differently than, say, Apple might with Safari, and definitely Chrome is a completely different animal, and Firefox is its own animal. And so I wouldn't say that Internet Explorer is slow. I think what happens is a lot of the types of malware out there are primarily targeting Internet Explorer. So sometimes people have a perception that Internet Explorer is slower because of they may have malware that they're not aware of and things like that. But I don't know if it's safe to assume that. I know Microsoft's way on top of things, but did you want to speak to that, Eric? I think I cut you off. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I agree with what you're saying. In fact, I think it's the important thing is to understand your application and how it works in these different browsers. Historically, IE6 has been pretty slow, but as you said, the new versions of IE are getting faster and faster. And the processing time varies between browsers depending on what you're doing in it, how much JavaScript you've got, and that sort of thing. So it's pretty hard to make a blanket statement.
Okay, I think maybe we have time for just one more here. Regarding performance, what would be the most efficient video solution to embed in a site?
Whoa, I think that's a pretty general question and a specific answer to.
I can give a general answer, one that performs well.
Yeah, okay. What I was going to say too, a fast one.
You know, you've got to make sure it's not going to drag down the client. That's the main thing. And, it needs to be something. When you're talking about mobile, you need to consider some of the types of technology may not be supported on some of these Apple devices without getting into specifics. And you got to be careful. You know, you got to make sure that you're using mainstream technology. I look at what the industry is using, and I'd go with that. That's what we generally try to do. Customer, if you're doing something way unique, and it requires them to download something, then that's not going to be something that they might have already. They probably had to download it at one time, but hopefully they've downloaded it before they've come to your site, and that's the way to go. That way you're not dragging down that customer experience and taking away their valuable time having them to have to load something or do something odd.
Okay.
Hey, Joe, if I can just jump in for a second. I'm also scanning the list of questions. I wanted to point out, Carter, that one of the attendees went to your website and loaded it in Firefox and loaded it in less than a second. So congratulations. You get a real-time confirmation of what you're doing.
That's good. I'm glad things are running while I'm on this call. If they weren't, I'd be in trouble.
Somebody else asked a question, too, about the kind of services that Gomez offers to help people confirm that their applications work across different browsers, and is it meant only for big companies? And the answer is no. Because Gomez is a SaaS offering where there's no installation, we can offer a very low-cost service for that sort of thing as well. So small company, big company, everybody has the same problem, and you can look to Gomez for help with that if you want.
Okay.
Joe, back to you.
All right. Well, we're out of time then about for today. I'd like to, on behalf of Retail Online Integration and Gomez and Eric and Carter as well, I want to thank everyone for attending today's Retail Roundtable. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you take just a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will be appearing on your screen next, we'd be grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. I hope to see you at the next Retail Online Integration Retail Roundtable. Thanks, everyone.